Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together. And we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne. You know, there have been times in my life when I've been in the midst of one hardship or another. And even in the midst of whatever hardship it is, I've been taken by something beautiful. The COVID-19 pandemic in 2020, for example, was a difficult time of isolation. But I was struck by the beauty of the care my family took for one another. So right along with the memories of difficulty are these really blessed memories of care and love. I think about that. The notion of beautiful moments sitting right in the middle of moments of loss or difficulty. When I think of our first story in this episode of The Appleseed. The story is from the great Georgia storyteller Andy Offutt Irwin. Andy's stories are often stories of his fictional Aunt Marguerite and the relatives and friends who inhabit her world, many of them based on real people in Andy's world. And this is one of those stories. In it, Aunt Marguerite says goodbye to an old friend. The story is called Book Every Saturday, for a funeral. And Andy told it live for our terrific studio audience. Here he is telling it for you on The Appleseed.
My 85-year-old Aunt Marguerite just recently graduated from medical school. We're also very proud of her. Yes. She's a dear one. She's one of the most important relatives in my life. And my son said, hey, Pop, the first weekend in June, let's go to the zoo. And he had talked to a couple of friends. They were going to go along. And I said, sure. And I had, this is in the before time, when I was on the road a lot. And we looked at our calendars together. And he's been keeping a calendar. You know, he was a little kid at the time, but he's keeping a calendar. And I called Marguerite. And I said, hey, we're looking at going to the zoo. Because he wanted Marguerite to go. He loves his great Aunt Marguerite. And she said, let me look. And I heard her turn to the pages of her desk calendar. And I called her in April. This was going to be in June. And she said, oh, that's a Saturday. I said, yes, ma'am. She said, I'll have a funeral. I said, what? She said, Andy, when you get to be my age, you book every Saturday for a funeral. I said, well, we still want you to go. She said, well, I'll pencil you in. And it came to pass that week that we were to go to the zoo, Marguerite got a call from her goddaughter, Mary, down in Cordial, Georgia, in South Middle Georgia. And Mary's mother is Joy, and Joy is one of Marguerite's dearest, dearest friends. They don't remember not knowing each other. Joy and Mary Frances and Marguerite have been friends all their lives, since they were diaper babies, as they say. They were actually in the nursery together at the First Methodist Church. And now Joy is in hospice at Mary's house. And Marguerite called me, and I said, and she said, I have to go down to Cordial. Joy's in hospice at Mary's house. I said, okay, so you want me to carry you down there? In the South, that means transport in a motor vehicle. I want to be clear. It was not, she ain't heavy, she's my... That's none of that. Okay. You want me to carry you down there? No, I'll drive. Now, she has a 1968 Plymouth Fury 2. It's the last car my Uncle Charles gave her before he died, because he hasn't given her any cars since. And she always changed the oil. She's going to go more than 75 miles. She gets an oil change. This is the showpiece of our Chrysler place. They love this car. She loves this car. She got in her car, and she started heading down. I told her to make sure she had her phone on, make sure she plugged it into the cigar lighter, and, you know, let me know if there's a problem, and check in when you get gas and stuff. I will. And she started making her way down I-75, but then she wanted to take the old road because she was feeling sentimental. So she got on Highway 41. Yes, the same highway where Greg Allman was born in the back seat of a Greyhound bus. Boy, that joke does not land outside of the South. Somebody. Anyway, so she gets on the road, and she's, you know, when you know you're heading towards grief, you start thinking about the people you love. And she started thinking about her daughter, her only child, my cousin, Francine. Francine is a medical researcher in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Francine likes being from the South. Francine has two PhDs. One's in chemical, biological chemistry, biology. What do you call that? Chemical biology. But it's one of them things. And I don't even know that she's a medical researcher because, you know, she couldn't actually be a physician because she would have to deal with people. She suffers with HDD, humor deficit disorder. When she was smaller, my Uncle Charles loved Shakespeare. He would quote Shakespeare out of context. And Francine was always embarrassed and never amused by Uncle Charles when he did Shakespeare. He had two dogs, one named Prince and one named Spot, right? I know, the most unoriginal dog. Do not cover your mouth when you laugh. That is rude. We went over this. All right, so whenever Spot was a Pooley sheepdog Dalmatian mix. And always, the only time it would get on his chair is when it was coming out for the rain. He'd get up on his chair and goes, out, damn Spot. And Marguerite said, do not cuss in front of our daughter and her friends. Honey, it's Shakespeare, it's classical. And then old Prince was his old lab, sweetest old dog ever. And then his hips gave out and his, you know, control of his bladder gave out. And we called old Dr. Exley. Old Dr. Exley is one of the first vets ever. He didn't know the difference between a small and a large animal vet. He worked on horses, he worked on parakeets. And when somebody he knew needed to put a dog down, he would come to us. And Uncle Charles and I both dug the grave. And Francine was there. We were both in high school at the time, Francine and I. And Dr. Exley came and he brought a little bit of starter fluid that has ether in it. And he put that on there and they gave the dog a treat and he put that over the dog's face and he gave the dog a shot and there was no pain at all. And of course, Uncle Charles said, good night, sweet prince. And may a host of angels carry thee to thy rest. And even then, Francine winced at Uncle Charles doing Shakespeare. Francine had a friend named Dan, and Dan and Francine were both in the flute section of the band, and she went to Dan's farm. His dad was a cattle farmer, beef cattle, and she met one of the cows. They just walked up to the fence, and Dan pulled up some weeds, and the cow took it out of his hand, and Francine petted the cow on the nose, and the cow went like that. And from that moment on, Francine never ate meat, never used leather, stayed away from all animal products. In fact, her daughter, Drusilla, there are very few pictures of Drusilla that Francine took. The only pictures of Drusilla were taken by my Uncle Charles and Aunt Marguerite, because back in the day, young people, that would require film. Film requires gelatin. Yeah, I know.
In the before time.
Yes. Film requires gelatin, and gelatin is an animal byproduct. So she was thinking about Francine. She has a tough relationship with her. And as she drove, she came by this field with little red dots all through it. It was beautiful. And there was a little hut there. And that hut had spray painted on the side, pick your own strawberries. And that's a big thing where I live, is stopping to get strawberries. Can y'all do that around here? Maybe. Okay, I don't know. But it was amazing. It was just an ugly, ugly little piece of writing. It was done with spray paint, all in one stroke. Diggity, diggity, diggity. She pulled the car over. There was nobody there, but it was high summer. It was like, you know, I mean, high season for strawberries, and whomever owns this place will probably be back. So in the back of her car, in the trunk, cars used to have trunks, in the trunk, she opened it up. There's her little grocery bag where she, you know, she puts her groceries in. She has a big floppy hat for the sun. She has a trowel there in case she meets a plant that needs liberating. And she put on her big floppy hat. She had the little bag. She went out into the field. She started picking strawberries. She had not brought any food where there's going to be grief. She had left in a huff, and she was feeling good about the strawberries. And she put the strawberries in the bag, and this mean old man came at her with a truck. Now, she knows that she was older than this mean old man, but she remembers childhood, and she knows the look of a mean old man. He was scowling through the dusty windshield of this old truck, and he got out. It was what kind of truck where you slammed the door, and it bounced open again, and he cursed and slammed it again. She said, what are you doing? She said, I'm picking strawberries. Didn't you see the sign? Yeah, it said, pick your own strawberries. That's right. These are my strawberries. Go get your own. She's never stolen anything in her life. She didn't know what to do. She can't put them back. She gets in the car, and she had heard the term pedal to the metal, but she had never done it. And when she did, she kicked up all that red dust. And when the tires hit the pavement, they made noise. They went, "Argh!" And she was scared to death. She was ready for him to call the cops. And she was listening for. And she's ready to old lady as hard as she could. "Is there a problem, officer?" But that didn't happen. And she drove and she drove and she finally began thinking of her husband, Charles. She's been a widow a long time. She misses Charles and she hears him from beyond sometimes. She remembers when he was in the hospital for his last days. And our town didn't have hospice back in those days. So she's hanging around the hospital. She's in the hallway. She's drinking coffee from a vending machine, which is nature's way of saying, go to bed. And Francine came in from Boston and gave her mama a hug. And outside the room, Marguerite was outside of the room because there was a doctor in there, a nurse in there, and somebody else putting in changing the needle on her central port. And when that technician put that needle in, Uncle Charles said, "If you pierce us, do we not bleed?" And when the morphine went through his veins, he said, "All's well that ends well." And Francine said, "Why does he have to do that? Why does he have to do that now?" And Marguerite said, "Sugar, don't you know anything about your father? Don't you know this by now? Your dad is a show-off." Uncle Charles heard that. He said, "Is that Francine? Francine, get in here." Francine walked in. He had lowered the bed. He had the remote control for the bed. Patted the bed so she could sit on it. He raised it. Up and down, up and down. Francine said, "Daddy, stop." He took her hand. He said, "Darling, all the world's a stage. And all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and entrances, and each one in his own time play many parts. His acts being seven ages. First the infant mewling and puking in his nurse's arms. And then the whining schoolboy with his satchel and fresh morning face, creeping like snail unwillingly to school. And then the lover, sighing like furnace with a woeful ballad to his mistress's eyebrow. And then the soldier, full of strange oaths and bearded like the pard, jealous in honor, sudden and quick in quarrel, seeking the bubble reputation, even in the cannon's mouth. And then the justice with fire, fair round belly, from good capon blind, eyes severe, beard a formal cut, full of wise saws and modern instances. So he plays his part. The sixth age shifts to the lean and slippered pantaloon, spectacles on nose and pouch on side, his youthful hose, well saved. A world too wide for his shrunk shank, and his big manly voice turned to childish trebles, pipes and whistles in its sound. Last stage of all, mere oblivion, sans teeth, sans eyes, sans taste, sans everything. Francine was weeping. She kissed her father, and their tears mingled. Marguerite watched that. She was thinking of that as she came in to the town of Cordele, Georgia. Cordele, Georgia is the watermelon capital of the world. I have a sticker on my guitar case that says it. I believe it. That settles it. She got behind a school bus truck. Now, a school bus truck is this. In the farms of South Georgia, especially the watermelon, cantaloupe, honeydew farms, what they do is they take a school bus, they take the seats out, they cut the top off, put up some railing, and you end up with a $1,500 truck in the tradition of my people. And she got behind one of those, and two watermelons fell off. They fill them all the way up. They're on their way to I-75 to distribute them throughout this great land of ours. And she saw two of those watermelons fall off the truck. And she was so excited. She pulled off into a parking place. This has been going on all day. There were watermelons all over this intersection. I took out my iPhone. iPhone. I took out my iPhone. You know you can take a picture with did you know it has a camera? You didn't know that. It does, sugar. It does. And I was so excited, I took a picture of the watermelon in the intersection there. And you can send it on the email. You can. You probably text emails for old people. I know you. And I sent it to Francine. I said, Francine, you'll love Cordell, Georgia. All the roadkill's vegetarian. She stopped by the farmer's market. She bought a couple of watermelons to bring something. And then she arrived just behind the carport of Mary's house. I worked a gig with Kuniko Yamamoto. You might guess she's Japanese. She's from Osaka, and we did a gig together in Philadelphia. And she said, there's a word that Japanese people say when they enter a house, if they don't live there, but they're welcome guests, and they don't have to knock. And then Kuniko said, there's no such word that's the same as English. And I said, oh, au contraire. Where I'm from, that word is woohoo. And that's the sound Marguerite made as she entered Mary's house. And Mary said, we're in the den, Aunt Marguerite. And Marguerite walked into the den, and there was the recliner that has the remote control that Joy had been using for a while. But then there was a hospital bed right next to it. Obviously a hospital bed set up by a Southern woman because it had a dust ruffle. It had little white Christmas tree lights going up and down the IV pole. And they were watching the baseball game, the Braves versus the Rockies. Watching the game, and Marguerite went to the bathroom, came back and sat in the recliner and reclined it, played with it a little bit, and held hands with her old, old, old dear friend, Joy. And they watched the game together. And baseball is a good game for conviviality. You can talk or you cannot. You can talk about the game or not. And these two women did not need to chat. They knew each other so very well. And they watched the game. And late in the game, they were discussing how happy they were that Chipper Jones had retired outright and did not become a designated hitter for the American League, which is an abomination. And late in the game, Joy said,
Dolly, it's the eighth inning, and we're down by 7 runs.
Marguerite said, I see that. And Joy said,
I'm running out of outs.
Marguerite is honest with her friend. I know. I love you.
I love you too.
When the game was over, Marguerite became aware that Mary was rubbing her shoulders. Marguerite picked up the remote control and said, Mary, catch me. Until she was standing up, but she didn't have her sea legs yet. And Mary held onto her, and Marguerite said,
Mary, do me a favor. I know you have one of those Keurig. Would you make me some coffee while I go to the bathroom?
And Mary said, what? It's bedtime. It's 10:30 at night.
Well, no, I'm going to go home, and would you make me some coffee, please? I have a long drive.
You're not going home tonight. There's a bedroom here. You know you're welcome.
I know I'm welcome. I know who my people are, but you need the room. I have been here. Please.
And Mary did, and Marguerite came out of the bathroom, and there it was, and she got in her 1968 Plymouth Fury. She stayed on I-75 this time. It's easier to find a restroom. She fell into bed when she got home. And at 8:15 in the morning, her phone went off. And it was Mary. And Joy had died in the night. So, she decided she needed to do something ordinary. She went to the sink, and she was embarrassed to see that there were dirty dishes in the sink, and she has a dishwasher, but she wanted to do them by hand. Of course, there was nobody there to be embarrassed in front of, but still, I felt ashamed. So it was a double sink. She filled up the sink with hot water. When the water was hot, she put on her Playtex living gloves, which come to life at night. She stopped up the sink. She pulled out the dishwashing liquid. She put a little in the dishwashing liquid, and she, bless you, darling. And she plopped the bottle on the counter, and one bubble came out of the bottle. Teeny little thing. And she watched it without language. It rose, and then it came and touched her on the ear, and she could feel it. How could she feel something so small? One little bubble of joy. It caught the thermal of the hot water in the sink, and it rose again, and it went behind her to the schoolhouse globe that illuminated the kitchen. She lost it in the light, and she said, "Bye, Joey." Because she is a scientist, she took the bottle, made the exact same motion, squirted some in, plopped it on the counter. No, just a little bit of liquid on the plunger cap there. So she took off her gloves. She turned off the water. She went and got her phone, and she called me, and she said, "I'm going with y'all to the zoo on Saturday."
That was Andy Offutt Irwin with Book Every Saturday for a Funeral. And listening to that story may remind you of a time when you felt a feeling of beauty or joy right at the same time as you were experiencing melancholy or difficulty. Maybe it brought to mind someone you've lost. And even though the loss might have been difficult, it may have brought to mind sweet memories associated with that person. It for sure did that for me. My mother passed away some time ago. It was long foreseen. It wasn't a surprise. And my siblings and I were able to gather and be with her in a lot of those last moments. And we got her siblings on the phone, my uncles and aunts. And while it was a difficult time of loss, it was also an unbelievably sweet, close time for us, a time of bonding, of facing and overcoming fears, of supporting one another. And we miss our mom. But that was a time of sweetness for us, too, in addition to the hardship of the loss. You know, there's a great song written by Bob Thiel and George David Weiss. My mom loved the song. It was written in a time when the nation was still processing the assassination of President Kennedy in the 60s, when we were escalating our involvement in the conflict in Vietnam. Ton of stuff about which to be concerned and troubled in that time. But in that time, these songwriters put in the mouth of the great Louis Armstrong the words, "I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright, blessed day and the dark, sacred night." And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. And I think that's one of the most beautiful lines anyone ever wrote or sang. It's the bright, blessed day and the dark, sacred night that make this a wonderful world. And it's sometimes riding right next to the moments of loss or difficulty or trouble that we find moments of closeness and support and help and healing and bonding and love. And I like the adjectives that the song uses to describe the light and the darkness. Those adjectives are blessed and sacred. And that's where Andy's story took me. Where did it take you? And who will you take along? Here we've got kind of a companion piece to Andy's story to share with you in our last moments together today. It's a song. Andy's a songwriter. And he wrote this song called "The Light Went Away." Let's hear him talk a little bit about it. And then let's hear the song. Here's Andy.
I was doing an 8-week residency in Garden Hill School in Atlanta, and I have a program. Actually, Sherry Norfolk put it in a book, my program for children, for kindergartners. It's called "I Got Those Low-Down, Dirty, Emergent Reader Blues." And literally was teaching 12-bar blues forms to kindergartners. And at that school, if you don't speak English by the time you're five, and sometimes you're born in Atlanta, if you don't speak English by the time you're five, they're kind of funnel kids to that school. And there are kids who speak English and kids who don't. And the teacher did this brilliant thing. She put a pencil and a piece of clay in the windowsill, and there was a shadow, and she drew, and the clay was on top of a piece of paper. And she drew a line around the shadow, and we went to lunch. And when we came back from lunch, of course, the shadow had moved away from the pencil. And this little girl who was from Korea said, "At night, we're in the shadow of the earth when it turns away from the sun." And then all of us wrote this song. This is this was my kid's lullaby. And a lullaby, as you know, is a song designed to render children unconscious. That's a Piers Pettis joke. I utterly stole that. So when I go up on the balls of my feet, you can sing, "The light went away." Will you do that with me? "The light went away." One more time for practice. "The light went away. Where did it go? The light went away. Nothing to see with. The light went away. Somewhere far. I think I can see Mars. Because the light went away." The light went away. Where did it go? The light went away. Nothing to see with. The light went away. And I saw a shooting star. It was a meteor that came down, gone before it hit the ground. When it's dark, we are in the shadow of the earth. When it turns away from the sun, then we have night. But on the other side of the earth, it is day. They have the light. But on the other side of the earth, it is day. They have the light. The light went away. Where did it go? The light went away. Nothing to see with. The light went away. And it's time to hit the hay. Because the light went away. Time to sleep. Don't make a peep. It's time to sleep. Shh. Night, night.
Thank you.
That was storyteller Andy Offutt Irwin. Have you ever had moments when you felt the light coming back after a period of darkness? Have you ever felt good things and hard things riding along in the very same experience together? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. We might share them on the show. You can tag us on social media or send us a message at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, @byu.edu. We want to thank Andy Offutt Irwin for sharing his stories and music with us today. You've listened to his tale. Now it's time to share one of your own. Turn everyday moments into extraordinary nature adventures with the BYU Radio podcast, Constant Wonder Kids. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.